You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
What if I told you there's one Chinese word that links three very different things over three very different moments in time and space? The first is a Chinese poem written roughly in 340 BC. The second is a song released by Pink Floyd in 1967. And the third is a 5,000-kilogram spacecraft that right now is hurtling through space more than 100 million miles from Earth and is headed for the planet Mars. That's one word is Tianwen. It's actually two Chinese words, but translates into one single word in English. Tianwen translates as heavenly questions. And Tianwen 1 is the name of China's first interplanetary mission to Mars. But it represents a lot more than that for China's space program. Welcome to a very different edition of the Inside China podcast. My name is Nadeem Shad. Now, normally you'd be hearing from my colleagues Mimi Lau and Kinling Lo, but right now they're both working furiously to finish stories leading up to the Lunar New Year. So I've stepped away from where I normally work on the video desk to helm the ship, as it were. And whereas our previous episodes have taken you to places like Beijing, Shanghai, Wuhan, and Shenzhen, this week, in order to catch up with Tianwen 1 as it heads towards Mars, we're going to need to stop off in Finland. But before we do, let me take you back and explain how ancient Chinese poetry, Pink Floyd, and a spacecraft are all linked by the word Tianwen. The Heavenly Questions were a series of more than 170 questions written as poetry by Chu Yan. Here's a little of what that sounds like.
九天之际,安放安熟,余威多有,谁知其数?
The borders of the ninefold heavens. Where do they stretch? Where do they join? Many are their corners and angles. Who knows their number?
天河所踏,十二烟分。 日月安属,烈星安辰.
Upon what are the heavens folded? Where are the 12 stages divided? How are the sun and moon attached? How are the constellations arrayed?
The heavenly questions are about the universe, how the planets and the earth came to be, as well as myths, legends, and historical events. Now, that inspired another Chinese poet, Li He, who wrote about Chu Yan and used the line, "Witness the man who raved at the wall as he wrote his questions to heaven." And that, in turn, inspired Roger Waters in a song he wrote for his band, Pink Floyd.
Witness the man who raves at the wall.
Set the controls for the heart of the sun.
Making the shape.
So now you're up to date with the ancient history of Tianwen. Let's set the controls for a launch pad on Hainan Island, off the southwest coast of mainland China in July last year. That's the sound of the Long March 5 heavy lift rockets blasting off from Hainan. Now, when an American rocket blasts off, there's normally a YouTube live video stream. There's animations, there's commentary, there's Twitter discussion about someone in the control room with a funny haircut. But in this case, there was pretty much one lone journalist who made sure people in the West got to see and hear it.
Okay, my name is Andrew Jones. I'm a freelance space journalist, and I'm in Finland, sat in my own sauna.
Andrew Jones is a space journalist with a very specific field of expertise. And yes, the spare room where he's working from home during this pandemic is the sauna attached to his home.
Which is not turned on and I'm fully clothed.
Now, the reason why you got to hear that audio of the rocket launch is because Andrew took it upon himself to both live stream the launch from a source he found on the Chinese social media platform Weibo, as well as live tweet it. His speciality is covering the Chinese space industry.
It's very interesting. It's very challenging. It can be quite rewarding if you can help to glean a few details, which help bring some context and some kind of idea of what's happening. China is very proud of its space program. It's a symbol of national pride and progress. At the same time, they are very keenly aware of how failure would then reflect upon on the leadership. So they're both wanting to show off what they have done and what they're capable of, at the same time trying to limit exposure to the negative sides of that when something goes wrong.
Which brings us to the Tianwen-1, which was on board that rocket launch back in July. It's China's first dedicated mission to Mars, but not its first Mars mission.
Yeah, so in 2011, China's first Mars mission was actually piggybacking on a Russian mission, which was aiming to land on Phobos, which is one of the two moons of Mars, and collect some samples and come back. So that was a very ambitious mission. China had a small spacecraft called Yinghuo-1, which would have been a small orbiter with a few science payloads. Unfortunately, there was a problem with the Russian rockets which launched the mission, and both spacecraft ended up re-entering the Earth's atmosphere a month or two after the launch. So that was a failure. But what we're seeing now is, you know, a decade on, is that China has the capabilities to carry out its own Mars mission, and a much larger Mars mission. So they have a new Long March 5 heavy lift launch vehicle, which was a big technological leap from their older rockets, which they use. They've also had experience of landing on the moon, operating spacecraft on different planetary bodies, well, the moon in this case. They made a lot of progress to the point where they're able now to carry out their own independent mission. So this is China's first interplanetary mission by themselves, and it's also the beginning of China's kind of forays into the outer solar system.
Tianwen-1 is China's first dedicated mission to the outer solar system, but definitely not its last. Somewhere around the year 2030, it's planning to send a spacecraft to Jupiter. But one of the reasons spurring on development of the Tianwen-1 might just be thanks to a little bit of national rivalry about getting to Mars. 2 years after the failed 2011 mission, China watched as India became the first Asian nation to reach Mars's orbit with its Mangalyaan orbiter vehicle, which launched in November 2013.
There was a big reaction from Chinese netizens. They had lots to say about India kind of surpassing China, on the face of it at least. So what we're looking at now with China's Tianwen-1 mission, there was a short, very short period for a mission of this magnitude, a short period between kind of officially approving the mission and then getting it launched. So it was approved early 2016, officially at least, although they probably had been working on some concepts and maybe parts of the spacecraft before then, until launch in 2020. So that's a very short time to get a mission together. So, and the fact that instead of just an orbiter, they're going with an orbiter alongside a rover, which they'll attempt to land on Mars, that's very complex. So very challenging, certainly for a first mission. So there may well have been an upgrade to China's plans because of what India did. At the same time, China had reached the point where it had the capabilities to at least attempt these things. So maybe they've done it a little bit quicker, maybe one Mars launch window earlier, perhaps, or maybe a more complex mission first off. But it's hard to say, but it's certainly something that's worth noting.
Now, you might remember, China wasn't the only country to launch a Mars mission in July last year. The United States launched a rocket carrying the Perseverance rover, as well as the Mars helicopter, which aims to be the first aircraft to fly around in Mars's atmosphere. But there was also a spacecraft launched by the United Arab Emirates, carrying their Hope orbiter, which is going to study weather patterns on Mars. If you ever wanted the appearance of a space race, Right now, there are three different spacecraft from three different countries all headed to one planet. But is it really a race?
Yeah, that's an astute observation. I would not use the space race narrative in a sense. I mean, that was a particular time and place and geopolitical context of the Cold War. This is certainly something new and interesting, but not a race. I mean, the Chinese and United Arab Emirates spacecraft might reach Mars first, but that doesn't, you know, guarantee success of their missions, or indeed mean that they're more challenging or complex than NASA's Perseverance rover. It's just simply orbital mechanics and when they get there. So that race kind of thing, in that very limited sense, doesn't hold much water. In terms of what we're seeing now, which makes people think of a space race, we're actually seeing space becoming more competitive in a sense and more open. We're seeing China, which has made big strides in the last decade or so, being able to carry out really complex missions like the Americans. Also, we're seeing smaller countries like the United Arab Emirates, which are also realizing that having a space industry and developing things like remote sensing, communication satellites, exploration, these can be very good for industry, for precision manufacturing, for the economy, high-end technologies and so on. But also, I think in terms of the UAE mission, that's kind of partly national security in the sense of keeping them, you know, in the discussion and keeping them on the map, as it were.
Andrew Jones wants us to think beyond the 1960s Cold War narrative and think about the scientific opportunities from so much equipment landing on Mars.
Three spacecraft carrying out different sets of experiments with many different payloads, and even where you have the Perseverance rover and China's Mars rover, if they both manage to land successfully, each of them has a ground penetrating radar. So that kind of instrument, which would allow you to kind of get an idea, maybe hundreds of meters below the ground on Mars, of what the geological history was and what the composition is. We haven't had that before. So to have that from two places where you're able to then have some kind of comparative science as well as just fascinating and useful data from the one instrument, I mean, that's going to be tremendous for the planetary science community. So yeah, it's a very exciting time in space.
So let's talk about these two vehicles, one from China and one from the United States, which, if they land successfully, will be trundling around the surface of Mars in a few months' time. If we try and compare the two vehicles, do we start by thinking the American version is an SUV?
NASA's Perseverance rover is kind of like an SUV. It's a big beast. So I think it's maybe around a ton, so like around 1,000 kilos. That's by far the biggest rover that... Well, apart from the Curiosity rover, which landed in 2012, which Perseverance is, you know, based on. So, I mean, these are really, really big things, and having the capabilities to actually land something of that size on Mars is amazing. So with NASA, you kind of get used to the amazing things that they do and kind of take them for granted. But what they're doing is, you know, really, really impressive. China's rover is going to be around 240 kilograms. So that's twice the mass of their U2 lunar rovers. So that's a big step up for them.
And whereas NASA is building on its knowledge of Mars landing since the mid-1970s, China is using its knowledge built up since it first launched its lunar exploration program, which started in 2003.
China used heritage kind of technology from its moon mission. So the propulsion that it's going to use to put the orbiter into orbit, so when they get to Mars, they'll have to slow the spacecraft down, so kind of Mars captures it with its gravity. So the engines are similar for the moon missions. The actual propulsion part of the landing, when spacecraft needs to slow down in its final descent, that's also coming from the Chang'e 3 and Chang'e 4 and Chang'e 5 landers. So that's something that they've proven there, although it's going to be different to pull this off on Mars with a different gravity situation and a, you know, thin atmosphere. Also, the Shenzhou missions, China's human spaceflight spacecraft. So they also have experience of developing heat shields, which you need for re-entering Earth's atmosphere, and also the parachute to slow down the capsule containing the astronauts. So they've adapted what they've learned from those four Mars. So all of those are, you know, that's difficult technology to develop. China's bringing together a lot of its expertise and a lot of its technical know-how from previous missions and trying to combine them for this Mars mission. So this is a huge step. It's really complex, and I think it would be really, really impressive if they managed to pull this off first time, given all the different variables and all the things that they'll need to learn.
Assuming things go according to plan, not long after listening to this podcast, you'll be reading world headlines about Tianwen-1 arriving in Mars's orbit. And Andrew's got a rough idea of exactly when that's going to happen.
It's February 10. I think it's around midday universal time or Greenwich Mean Time. So that's going to be, 8 o'clock in Hong Kong in the evening. So I think that the best calculations, that's unofficial time. That's from radio amateurs who are kind of tracking signals coming back from Tianwen-1 and decoding them to work out what speed and where it is and so on and where Mars is, and then coming up with a calculation, which is really useful and very, very impressive that, you know, that people with their own radio dishes can do this kind of thing. My understanding is that the spacecraft will go first into quite an elliptical orbit. So rather than like being in a circle around Mars, it's going to have a big oval shape before coming down into a more circular orbit ready for the landing. My thinking on this is that's partly to do with the fact that they're sending like a 5-ton spacecraft, but they have this propulsion which is for a smaller spacecraft.
Let's keep in mind that the 5-ton Tianwen-1 spacecraft is currently traveling at around 64,800 kilometers per hour, just over 40,000 miles per hour. It's going to take a while to slow it down.
The other thing is that when it comes to preparing for a landing, they need to get the orbit right to target where they want to land. They also have very powerful images on the orbiter. So the idea is that they would then take pictures of the landing site or the candidate landing sites that they have, and then upload those into the rover, and also kind of work out as best they can what the conditions are in terms of dust storms and atmosphere around the landing site. So they'll be able to, with all that data, run some simulations and be more confident about the landing, or certainly give themselves a much better chance of the landing. So NASA's Perseverance rover is going to just come in and make the landing straight off. But you know, they're the established pros when it comes to Mars landings. So there's a bit of a difference there, but I think it's something which is quite pragmatic and it gives us two things to look forward to. So we might see the successful orbital insertion, see some images coming back, and then we get to wait and see when the landing comes.
Andrew's got a theory about when China's Mars rover might actually be attempting its landing.
So one date which appeared in a presentation made by Ye Peijian, who was kind of a senior figure from the lunar program and China's exploration program. He had noted in this presentation that April 23rd would be the date which the landing attempt could take place, which would be one day before the anniversary of the first satellite, the Dongfang-Hong-1 satellite being put into orbit by China.
Andrew is talking about April 24th, 1970. That was the date China's first ever satellite was launched into space, the Dongfang-Hong. It lasted for 20 days in orbit, and on board, it carried a music player and an ultra-shortwave transmitter, which played one song. The song is called The East is Red, which one might consider to be an appropriate song for landing on the red planet.
Typically, as with China, they're very cagey with giving information away like this. So it's a matter of waiting to see. There's one interesting thing here, which means finding out the time and date of this landing would be scientifically really important, not just helpful for a journalist like me. But NASA in 2018 landed a lander not too far away from the primary candidate landing site for China's mission. So this InSight lander, it has a very sensitive seismometer, and it's been detecting these small Mars quakes and seismic activity on Mars. So what that mission is now planning to do is trying to actually hear the entry, descent, and landing from NASA's Perseverance rover, somewhere to the east of this InSight thing, about 3,000 kilometers away. So the idea is that when it enters the atmosphere, it will release these two pieces of, I think it was titanium or tungsten, and they will fall kind of at, you know, supersonic speeds to the ground. They might be able to detect these, and if they know the direction and time when they're coming, that's going to be very helpful for the InSight science team. And also, there might be a case where the sonic boom created when the spacecraft comes into the atmosphere, when that boom hits the ground, it might be converted into seismic waves, which then the spacecraft could pick up. Now, that's a bit of a digression, but the point is that Tianwen-1 rover would be landing a lot closer to InSight. So if we can get the time of day and the date and everything to when that's going to happen, then InSight can calibrate its sensors so it would be able to pick up and get a very good reading, including the direction and everything, of the seismic signals from Tianwen-1. So that would be really interesting. However, the problem is here that China doesn't like giving away information, so we don't know when that's going to happen. And NASA also can't have bilateral dealings with China without giving 60-day notice to Congress and getting the FBI to sign off saying this is not in any way a risk in terms of technology or national security and so on. So the bar is quite high. So
you heard that right. NASA has had its InSight lander parked on Mars since 2018. But if they want to be able to communicate with the Tianwen-1 lander vehicle that's planning to land nearby in a couple of months, they're going to need the FBI to sign off on it. Thus, the geopolitics of the US and China have ramifications on a planet 181 million kilometers from Earth. But beyond the politics, are American and Chinese scientists talking to one another?
Between American and Chinese scientists, yes. So that applies what I was talking about, the so-called Wolf Amendment, which is kind of, it was put into appropriations bills in Congress affecting NASA, I think in 2011 for the first time. So that talks about bilateral cooperation. So for example, they can go to a large meeting. For example, there's international planetary roadmap meetings and so on. So they go and discuss things there more freely, but those are, you know, they're not going to set up something ad hoc for just the Americans and Chinese to, you know, have a chat about something. So scientists from universities in America can work together with Chinese counterparts as well. So there are opportunities for, you know, exchanging of research and collaboration there. But yeah, it can be very difficult when it's NASA and it's Chinese entities like China's Academy of Sciences or the main space contractor.
China and the United States are both able to launch rockets to Mars, but we're struggling to get them to talk here on Earth. Last year was the busiest year in China's history of space exploration. There was an estimated 34 separate space launches, and there's a few reasons for that, not the least of which included the dark side of the moon.
So part of that is kind of catching up with some of the space infrastructure that the other major countries, the European Space Agency, NASA, the Russians, what they've got up there. China last year completed its own version of GPS, which are navigation, positioning, and timing satellites. So kind of we use apps on our phone to kind of find out where we are and where we want to go and all that kind of thing. Also used in the timing aspect of financial transactions, all kinds of things like this. Also used for guiding missiles and organizing troops. So China completed its Beidou constellation last year. So they've been rolling that out for around 20 years, and they've got like 35 satellite system up and running. They launched the Chang'e 5 lunar sample return, which was a really complex and ambitious mission. So there was four spacecraft, basically. They went to the moon, went into orbit, sent a lander down, collected some samples, sent a smaller spacecraft back up, managed to make that kind of rendezvous and dock with the orbiter, which was still waiting there, which doing that around the moon had never been done before by robotic spacecraft. And then came back, dropped off the samples, and then the probe is now heading to a kind of special gravitationally stable point closer to the sun. So that mission is still going on. They actually they launched what they called an experimental reusable spacecraft. Now, we haven't seen a picture of what this is, but the idea is that this is some kind of reusable spacecraft with wings, which eventually would be able to take astronauts up into orbit or satellites and deploy them and come back and land like on its wheels, like the shuttle. It'd be much smaller than the shuttle, at least this test thing was. So, but yeah, we don't exactly know what it was, because this mission was referred to online by some Chinese as Mission 500,000, because that's the amount of fine in UN that you'd have to pay if you start talking about this mission when you shouldn't be. So yeah, that was a super interesting mission, which was kind of, there were a few clues that they might do something like this, but it was still a bit of a surprise when it went up.
But Andrew's also observing a much bigger change in China's space program as well.
But what China's also doing, and this is a major development, is they're kind of looking to what America has done with SpaceX, with its launch vehicles and things like Planet Labs, which have put up lots of remote sensing, taking pictures of the Earth and sending them back for commercial purposes. So trying to commercialize their space programs. So there's been, must be over 1,000 companies probably related in some way to space, which have emerged since late 2014. These are building rockets, they're building satellites, they're building parts for satellites, they are developing data systems which will interpret all this data, ground stations to support these missions, all kinds of things, all kinds of companies coming out of nowhere. And last year we saw Galactic Energy, which was one of the newer launch companies, actually put a satellite in orbit, so that was something notable. And there's at least 10, maybe 20 different launch companies which have sprung up in China, and they're all trying to get their rockets online and working so that they can start launching satellites for commercial companies who want to send up maybe a radar imaging satellite or a science satellite or communication satellites in low Earth orbit. So there's so much going on there. That's like basically China trying to unleash the state's kind of more slow-moving space industry that they have and bring private capital into this and get things moving and attract investment from outside. So that's certainly something to watch.
So what does success look like for China's mission to Mars? Is this about proving to other nations that it is now capable of sending missions to other planets? Or is this about proving to its home audience that China's space program can reach beyond the moon?
This is kind of coming around the time of the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Communist Party of China. So there's kind of a lot at stake, along with the anniversary of the Long March 1 launch, that is kind of notable. So yeah, this is really ambitious. So the landing, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it really just didn't work, because, you know, European Space Agency and Russia have tried this before. They haven't got it to work. So if I would be even kind of surprised if they pull this off first time. You know, at the same time, they're very, very capable. I mean, given the fact that there's a good chance that this could fail because it's so hard to do, how is China going to play that? I don't know. But as long as the orbiter gets into orbit and they can deliver pictures of Mars, and they will, if they do that, then there'll be quite spectacular images. So that's something that they'll be able to show the lander. Then maybe they'll be a bit quiet. There won't be too much made of, you know, a landing failure, I don't think. You mentioned the space race before, like the American astronauts and the Russian cosmonauts, they were sent around the world, right? They were showing off and saying, look, these guys have been in space. This is what they've done. This is how great we are. With China, it's more domestic. I feel it's much more about domestic legitimacy and so on. So they'll be able to kind of control the, you know, what's said negatively, if there's any failure. Also highlight all the good things.
Now, if you want to follow Andrew Jones on Twitter, his handle is @AJ_FI, and you can see his work on the spacenews.com and space.com websites. That's all we have for you on Inside China this week. Don't forget, you can find all the coverage of China's space program, as well as the news happening here on Earth, on the South China Morning Post website, scmp.com. My name is Nadeem Shad. Thank you for listening, and thank you for rating and sharing the Inside China podcast on your favorite podcast app. Bye for now, and remember, live long and prosper.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.